Sammy Roth, welcome to KABU.
Happy to be here, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Sammy Roth has been in climate journalism for the last 7.5 years, the last 2.5 years for the LA Times. He writes the Times Boiling Point weekly newspaper. It explores climate change, energy, and climate action. He's covered many of the great stories coming out of California's climate change efforts. Plus, he's examined the phenomenal growth of community energy in California in the last 10 years, when pursuant to state law, city and county governments have taken over more than 5 million electricity customers from California's investor-owned utilities, who, however, are now fighting for their lives and are trying to destroy community energy. He's most recently covered a stunning study commissioned by the L.A. City Council and its public utility in L.A., its Department of Water and Power, probably the most famous utility in the world from the movie Chinatown. The study stunningly found that L.A. could be 98% powered by renewable energy by 2030. That's less than 10 years from now, and it could be 100% renewable by 2035. Sammy Roth, tell us about LA 100, the 100% renewable energy study. Why and how it was commissioned, its findings, and the way they did it to reach that finding. It really was a most careful study.
This is a really important and quite interesting study that was conducted for LADWP by the National Renewable Energy Laboratory, or NREL, which is this federally funded research institute out of Colorado. And what NREL did was they used a supercomputer, the Eagle supercomputer, on their campus in Golden, Colorado. And over the course of like 4 years, they conducted more than 100 million simulations of the power grid in the city of Los Angeles. They had like 100 people working on this. They integrated all sorts of data on the condition of the grid and how electricity demand was going to change and what weather conditions would look like as the planet warms up and how much potential there is for rooftop solar on homes. And they pulled all of this together and they ran all these simulations. They basically figured out, yes, in terms of technical feasibility, if you look at all of the clean energy options available to Los Angeles, yeah, we can do 98% carbon-free electricity in the city by the year 2030 if we want to, and 100% by 2035, which is the target date that President Biden has set for the whole country to reach 100% clean energy. There are different options they looked at. They also looked at options for waiting until 2045 for 100%, which is what California's current legal mandate is. They found that the most expensive option, which would be doing this by 2035 without nuclear energy, which some folks don't like, it would cost $86 billion. They found that doing it by 2045 and including more things such as nuclear, you could do it for as low as $57 billion. A lot of it's going to depend on what individuals do as well and how successful city policy is at getting people to, put rooftop solar and batteries in their homes. They're replacing their gas heaters with electric heat pumps, getting electric cars. And, of course, that's going to change demand on the power grid and change the scope of what you need to do. But overall, the main finding was you have a lot of options, but it's feasible to do this, and it's feasible to do it rather quickly.
Yeah, there's a few things that they studied that I thought were important. They also talked about zero carbon building and retrofitting all the old structures. And I think most importantly about energy conservation and use reduction. And they had to make estimates of how much could be saved in building out the whole system if, in fact, people used European levels, for example, of energy. If U.S. North Americans use less energy approaching European levels, the amount of building out of new energy and all of the rest would be cut by maybe a third or so, which is an enormous amount of effort, money. It seems to me that study is really unrivaled in its thoroughness.
I think that you will see more studies like this. This was a first of its kind effort, so I think it is going to get somewhat easier to do this with practice and with investment in computing capability.
The question, Sammy, then becomes, what is LA and the Department of Water and Power, which is a public utility in LA, what's it doing with the study? Are they serious and taking steps to implement the 2030 pathway to 98%? Or is it like so many, many cities, just a well-illustrated plan that no one expects actually to be completed?
Well, I think a lot of this is just yet to be seen. The one significant thing that's happened since the study was published is that the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, came out and, based on the results, endorsed this 2035 target date that we should get to 100% clean energy by that year, came out with that in his State of the City speech. At the same time, I mean, it's been reported by us and by others that Garcetti is expected to take an ambassadorship job in the Biden administration and could be, you know, leaving the city quite soon. So I think there's pretty strong political support for this stuff here, but it's sort of yet to be seen where his successor will fall. I think the main thing that LADWP, and they told this to me, that they need to do is they need to start signing, you know, power purchase agreements, significant quantity of them and pretty big ones pretty quickly. You know, there was a finding that LA has to build somewhere between 470 and 730 megawatts of solar, wind, and batteries every year for the next 25 years on average. And to put that into context, if you look at what the build out has been for the last couple of years, that's, you know, potentially three times as much stuff as we've already been building. You know, what they need to do is they need to start making those investments and start actually investing as well in new transmission lines to move this energy around. And, you know, that was their comment to me, that they don't have a year to wait, that they need to start doing this stuff right now. So I'm waiting to see if that happens. And the other side of things, you know, you look at a rooftop solar policy and electric heat pumps and, you know, gas use in buildings. And that's kind of an area as well where it's like, you know, a little bit of waiting to see what happens. There are a bunch of cities in California, several dozen now, that have either banned gas in new buildings or significantly incentivized that new buildings should be all electric so that they can, you know, run without burning natural gas and adding to emissions. And folks in LA have talked about that for a while, you know, doing something like that. Garcetti has said he's open to some kind of clean buildings policy, but he did a survey of the city council a couple months ago, and of the 15 of them, I only had four who, you know, came out explicitly in favor of that type of a, you know, electric-only building policy. Not that that's the only way you could deal with emissions in buildings. There are other options out there, but it's not like the city has thus far pursued those either. So to answer your question, I do think they're serious about this, but it came out a couple months ago, and thus far I'm still waiting to see what happens next.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old World Variety Hour on Cable Radio, 90.7 FM. I'm talking to Sammy Roth. He's been a journalist doing the climate beat for the last 7.5 years at the LA Times. He writes the Boiling Point weekly newsletter, exploring climate change, energy, climate action. There's considerable barriers. Clearly, you've talked about some of them. It's an enormous project. It will take money. My sense is that much of the stuff can be done by local contractors, in contrast to the investor-owned utilities who are still angling across the United States to replicate their system using a humongously big grid. We need grids, but not continent spanning, not so high security, and not as expensive, not singularly designed pylons crossing rivers and into forests and the rest. It seems to me, though, that it can be done. Let's talk about the funding. $86 billion is a lot of money, but that stretches out over a number of years. On a yearly basis, it's not much. And in fact, it's not much when you compare it to the amount of money that Biden is ready to dedicate to highway improvement. Let's talk about a number of the barriers. First, the costs.
Yeah, I think that you're right that the $86 billion over this period of time at the high end is relatively manageable. I mean, what the NREL folks did was they compared it to the overall size of LA's economy. LA has $200 billion in annual economic output, and compare $86 billion over 15 or 25 years or whatever the timeline ends up being to a city with a $200 billion annual economy. It's a small fraction. The summation of the study was that this is not going to affect the city's economy on net in any meaningful manner. So that's important to keep in mind. You know, also important to keep in mind that, as you referred to, the President Biden has a climate and infrastructure plan that's out there, and you know, maybe that goes somewhere and maybe it doesn't, but long term it seems pretty likely that there's going to be federal support here as well, that it's not just going to be on the backs of, you know, cities and states to fund this all on their own. One thing I do want to comment on, you made the point about how it would be better to do this all with smaller locally energy installations rather than, you know, big continent-spanning grids and big companies. The research that I've written about, there seems to be pretty universal agreement among folks who have really done, you know, thorough, rigorous analysis of this, that you're going to need a combination of both of those things. Even though there is a technical potential to put rooftop solar on, you know, every house in America and parking lot and carport and garage, that you could, in theory, get at least much of the nation's power that way, for a combination of economic reasons and technical reasons about the way the grid operates, that doesn't seem especially feasible. I wrote about a study a couple of months ago that was done by a firm called Vibrant Clean Energy that was commissioned by groups that are favorable towards rooftop and local solar development. And this study, it's quite optimistic. I mean, it has been cited a lot by folks as who want more local clean energy. And it found that if you had a big national build-out of distributed solar, as they're saying, rooftops and warehouses and local community installations, that you could save almost $500 billion overall on the cost of the clean energy transition by really going big on rooftop solar. At the same time, the overall number they found was that, you could get like 247 gigawatts of power from rooftop, but you would still need 1,500 gigawatts, six times that amount from big solar and wind farms. You're going to need a lot of transmission and big continent-spanning type infrastructure for that. So I just wanted to put that out there, that it's not quite so simple as saying, if you do one, you don't need the other. It seems like there's going to be a pretty strong need for both.
Yeah, I exaggerated the need for local power, locally generated. But people like Mark Jacobson talk about smallish utility-scale plantations, let's say 50, 60, 80 miles from the point of use. L.A. could have wind turbines off the coast and also wind turbines and solar in the high desert, near Lancaster, which is now 100% small city.
And L.A. is getting a lot of its energy from those sources now. I mean, the city is contracting with solar farms that are in the northern desert part of the county and southern Kern County, and windmills that are out in the Tehachapi Pass that aren't too far from the city. I mean, they're definitely doing that. It's not like all of the stuff is far away. But at the same time, they're also, signing contracts for wind power in New Mexico, for instance.
Yeah, I think what I'm most concerned about is the investor-owned utilities and the bankers maintaining control of the energy system and profiting so handsomely from it, especially the underwriters and the people who hold the bonds and the rest of that apparatus. They impose huge rents on the U.S. economy, and they slow the pace of doing anything because they don't want to strand assets. It seems to me that it has to be the cities and states who control the pace of change. Yes, the private sector, so-called, also the public big plantations. It is necessary, especially for high population areas like New York or L.A. It requires some very big plants. I'm wondering about the investor-owned utilities. They're trying to stay alive in California, like PG&E, trying to force the state to pay the damages for the fires, and the state would have to partner with PG&E, one of the most negligent utilities that did everything to maintain their dividend, including not taking care of their lines, causing whatever it is, $30 or $40, $50 billion worth of damages and many deaths in California. I'm a little afraid that they're still alive and going to force and be in a position to force the state to partner with it. Is that a possibility?
The way things are now, I think that's it's very likely that PG&E will continue to play a significant role. I mean, a couple of points. One thing to keep in mind with community choice aggregation, which I have written a lot about, a lot of the community choice aggregators have been quite successful so far in terms of scaling up clean energy, but something to keep in mind there is that PG&E and in Southern California, you have Edison and San Diego Gas and Electric, they're still the companies that are owning and operating the electric grid. So even in, you know, Marin and Sonoma and parts of LA County and places that have launched these CCAs, they're still dependent on the big investor-owned utility actually delivering the energy to them and running the system that delivers the energy. So even if the entirety of California tomorrow were to go into the community choice model and the utilities were no longer in the business of buying and selling energy, the whole thing of clean electric grid would sort of be happening on the backs of their transmission systems and distribution systems. So for one, I think they're not going away for that reason. You know, another thing to keep in mind, and your point about the enormous problems that PG&E has caused is very well taken. So I, you know, totally understand and hear from folks all the time who are incredibly frustrated that they still have to continue to deal with this company and their continuing mistakes. But, you know, it's interesting when you look at clean energy policy. I mean, PG&E stands to benefit, you know, significantly both from the transition and the other investor-owned utilities, both from the transition to clean energy, but especially from the investments that they'll be asked to make in the electric grid. We're right now, California is attempting to become more dependent on the electric grid as a society. We're talking about, you know, electrifying vehicles and transportation, which is going to add to electric demand. You know, we're talking about placing gas heaters and gas stoves with, you know, with electric heat pumps and induction stove, which is going to add demand on the electric grid. And, you know, there are arguments for and against, you know, being so reliant on the electric grid, but that's what California is attempting to do right now. And so for a company like PG&E or Southern California Edison, for instance, they're seeing that as a big opportunity because that's going to allow them to invest all sorts of money in the expansion and maintenance of the grid, and they get guaranteed returns on that. You know, the ratepayers have to pay their profit margins when they make those investments. It's a little bit of a two-sided coin because on the one hand, yeah, there's the argument that you're making of why should this transition be benefiting these big monopoly companies that we don't have a choice but to deal with? Can't we do this without them? You know, the other argument I think would be that so much of the obstacle and barrier to climate change action has been, you know, political resistance and economic resistance and, you know, entrenched players who are fighting against this stuff. And here we've got some entrenched players that have a pretty strong economic motivation to argue for it and to push it along. And you see that happening in practice, not always, but sometimes. They've certainly, you know, been fighting to reduce incentives for rooftop solar because that hurts their business model, and that's been an active fight with climate advocates in California right now. But at the same time, PG&E has been super favorable, or at least, you know, not resisted policies, phase out gas service territory. You know, it's the gas company, but it's also the electric company. So if people are switching from gas to electric, it kind of still benefits, and it knows that. So I guess all I'm trying to say is that it's a complicated issue with a lot of different factors involved. But to answer your question, yeah, I kind of expect PG&E is not going anywhere.
My sense is that running it for the transmission system and doing the services, the computer billing and all the rest of it, and even much of the repair, they are a regulated utility now. If the California Public Utility Commission or the public utility commissions in other states were to, in fact, crack down on them and, in fact, force them to do what they should be doing more quickly. In fact, some of the grid is already being managed by one of the state agencies, that they would be doing that work, but under far more supervision and according to more rigorous standards than they have now. And they wouldn't be making the policy then for the entire energy system. They would be playing a part in the entire effort, but not be on top of the heap. The question is how much power they're going to have. Somebody's going to have to do that work, whatever you call them. And they have some experience, and they've got a lot of good workers who will do it. You don't want to get rid of them. You want to force them to adapt to this new world.
Probably go back to what I said before, that I think the future is going to be a combination of things and not all one thing. I do think that big power companies, utilities, and independent producers are going to continue to be part of the scene. I think there's going to be a lot more local community-type work on the power grid.
Yeah, I agree. The question is, what's the combination going to look like? Sammy Roth, you're a great reporter.
Thank you, Bill.
People want to yet climate action and the major developments occurring on the climate and environmental front. The LA Times really does a good job, and Sammy Roth's newsletter at Boiling Point, it's a weekly newspaper. It's a must-see for people who are really interested in the climate.
I really appreciate you saying that, Bill. No, thank you. And if anyone wants to sign up for Boiling Point, they can do that by going to latimes.com/boilingpoint, and you just have to enter your email from there.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.